Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Here's my plan to fix the Rockets, Blankers. I want to run it by you. First off, you move on from Steven Silas. I think the writing's on the wall there. How do you say my dude's name that got let go because he was womanizing women from Brooklyn? Ime Udoka. You hire Ime Udoka to be your head coach. He's the head coach of the Houston Rockets. This is the guy that I need. He's going to force the young players to play defense. He's going to force them into good shot selection. He's going to, you know, make good basketball decisions, which we don't know if it's going on right now with the Houston Rockets. You probably have to move on from Rafael Stone. I think that you can make it work. I think Rafael Stone could take a back seat, much like Nick Caserio is taking a back seat to D'Amico. I think Stone could do that for Udoka. Probably not, but I think it could work, potentially. But that's kind of like on the back burner. You finish with a top two spot in the NBA draft lotto. Because, again, control the controllables here. You can control that sort of thing. Maybe you give Adam Silver the frozen envelope or the frozen ping pong ball to guarantee a top two pick. So you get... You know, you're signing Udoka to be your head coach. You're probably moving on from Stone. I think it could work if he's willing to take a back seat. There's questions if he's willing to do that. You finish with a top two pick. You sign James Harden with all the money that you have, and you run out of starting, and you get rid of Kevin Porter Jr., even if you have to cut him. I don't care. If you have to cut him, you have to cut him. I don't care. So James Harden's your point guard. You got Jalen Green. Your wings are a rotation of K.J. Martin. I like K.J. Martin quite a bit. Tari Eason. Then you down low, you have a rotation of Alpi Shingun and maybe Victor as well, if he's going to be on this team. If it's not Victor, then you probably don't sign Harden because I want Scoot Henderson to be the point guard. So that's the difference I would make there. I think you have the makings of a potentially young, promising team, but you got to get that head coach right more than anything else and then get lucky in the lottery.
Not only the head coach, Jeremy, you have to clean house. You have to clean house, and Silas and Stone are connected. There's too much truth now coming out that's been going on for too long. And I've talked to general managers that used to and our general managers in this league that said it's unheard of the things that he's doing. And the fact, and it goes from coach manipulation to practices to the lack of preparation and due diligence on scouting to all the different things across the board. It's such a vitally important time for the Houston Rockets. It's salvageable at this point, right? Because you still have the roster. You still have potentially one more year of really, really top-end pick coming up, of a top-end pick coming up with your own pick. And then from there, and you have a lot of cap money. So you have to get it right now. And that starts by cleaning house. Because from what, you know what, we always say the truth lies somewhere in the middle. But if it was just one guy saying one thing, you'd go, oh, that's someone that's got an axe to grind. Well, you're hearing it from ex-players that are broadcasters. You're hearing it from NBA beat writers. You're hearing it from people that are in the know for a variety of reasons. You're hearing it from the guys that, you know, the Brian Windhorst of the world and the Shams Charanias and the Woj type people that are saying they've all known it. They just haven't had a reason to really put it out there, and now it's out there. So now if you want the free agents to come, if you want people to respect you, if you want players to listen – you've got to clean the slate, and you've got to get the right people. You've got to get some guys that young players can respect, but that can understand they've been there, done that, and this is why it's about them listening to the coaches, not the coaches doing whatever to coddle the kids. You can get one of those two players, and I'm with you. I believe that they can stay on this rebuild track, and they can go in the right direction. But if you somehow don't end up with one of the top two picks, and you somehow, for some reason unknown to me, keep one of those two guys, you can derail this whole thing for a long time.
I don't think that you can survive not getting a top two pick if you do all the other things right. Like, if you bring in a disciplinarian head coach that's a really good – I think Udoka would be really good here. Like, hide the women. Don't bring them to the games.
Kenny Atkinson. Those are the kind of guys that can get in the – work with young kids. But they've also been at the biggest, at the pinnacle, you know, Udoka chasing a chip, Kenny Atkinson as Steve Kerr's number one guy now and working with the Warriors. So the young kids have to respect
these
guys. You
got to get a good coach. The coach to me, actually, this is a tough question. Would you rather have the coach or a top two pick in the lotto? Like if I guarantee you Udoka, but the number three pick in the NBA draft or Steven Silas and a top two pick, what are you taking?
top two pick.
I'm going the former.
I'm taking the top two pick because you can still move on from Silas in a
year. See, now you're bending the rules, though. Like, okay, 5 years of Silas.
Well, I don't say
like,
I,
you're, and I'm not
yeah,
even saying
you've got to
like,
give me the prerequisite that I have to keep Silas for an extended period
of time.
And
Silas I was using just as, like, the namesake. Like, I'm talking about a coach of, like that. Like, you move on from Silas, but then you just hire another Steven Silas. You know what I mean? Like, same tier, the same caliber of coach that's going to let the general manager walk all over him. Like, it doesn't necessarily even have to be Silas. But are you taking the really good coach and the number three pick, or a really mid coach and a top two pick?
I just think that the top two pick is that important.
I think the coach is more important.
I think this year it's more important than ever, because you look at every mock draft, no one has been ready to make the adjustment yet. But there's not a chance in hell I'm drafting Brandon Miller.
See, that was what I was about to ask, too.
And that's
if you
the
have
problem.
The number three pick, who are you picking?
Brandon Miller's right there, this kid from Alabama. Like, it seems like he's the consensus.
You got to worry about all that stuff off the floor right now.
And it seems way better to get one of those top two guys and figure out the coach down the road than Brandon Miller.
So important.
Like, it really is.
We're watching this play out with a bad coach.
But
it would look so different with a good coach.
I agree. And I think that, of course, in the near future, you have, and with your assistant coaches, you've got to get veteran coaches that are still in the same ilk as the guys we were talking about. A Kenny Atkinson, who's been willing to take an assistant coaching job, but knows his stuff like nobody's business and can really get with the kids, get them, you know, get on the same page with them and teach them some things. But I think that, I've said forever and a day that the draft in the NBA has become based on potential. Very, very few times do you see these franchise-changing players come out like the LeBrons in the draft that we used to see when LeBron and Carmelo and D-Wade were in the same draft class. And if you had a top-five pick, you basically, unless you took Darko Milicic, really had a can't-miss player that was going to be with you and be an all-star. These kids at the top of the draft, this is the kind of ratings they're getting right now. This is the way they're talking about them. You, with one of those two kids and what you have, any coach is going to want this job. It's going to change the culture. It's going to change everything else. But now you have to get one of these young coaches that might be Silas-esque, but has to come in with more confidence. Come in knowing that, hey, this is my time, as well as whoever we drafted's time. And now I can hitch my wagon to them for an extended period of time if we get on the same page. Because now, if you didn't get rid of Stone, between the kid you took and the new coach, if there's a problem, now the two of you can get rid of him.
See, I just think it's wasted. Like, same way that Jalen Green has in a lot of ways been wasted his first couple of years, that if you get the Wimmy or Scoot, that if you just have a mediocre coach, you're just tooling away in mediocrity. Dre says Adoko can be a good coach, but not with a roster of AAU players. No coach can be good with a roster of AAU players. You can't win basketball. You can't win in college. You can't win in the NBA. Letting the players run at AAU style. You have to be disciplined and get that out of them to where they're now playing team ball, even in the NBA, and which a lot of times can be very individualistic. It can be very selfish. It can be, I'm going to score this amount of points per game. I don't care about everybody else. The best coaches are the ones that instill that discipline in them and get the AAU out of them. So I'm going to go with the coach to get that out of them more than I'm going to take, a really good player that's committed to playing AAU. Ocho says Brandon Miller is the best player in this draft, and it ain't close. From a project point of view, he's probably the third best player, maybe even the fourth best player. From production point of view, he's having an unbelievable freshman year at Alabama.
If you watch Victor Wembanyama play, if you watch him and you do any kind of a deep dive on film study, and you realize at his height and size, the way his ability to shoot the basketball, to get his balance in the air, to have range from all the way out to the three-point line, and then still have the wingspan and the athleticism inside. Granted, he's got to put on weight. He's got to get stronger. But he's young enough, and he's still maturing enough to the point where he's going to get better and better from that point. But the things that you really can't teach are a guy that size isn't supposed to move that fluidly and be able to shoot that easily and have that kind of touch. Scoot, to be a kid that size running the point and have the court vision and the ability to pass the ball, and still his body at his age looks more like it's already physically developed to a point to be ready for the league. Those two kids right there, they're different. They're special. So, I think Miller
is actually more fluid than Victor. I think he's more fluid. I think he's
better
with the ball.
But Victor at his size.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
Victor at his size is, you know, it's much different. And I think that he could be a rim protector. Now, I think he could also right now be bullied down low. And we've seen
absolutely
evidence of that. Miller's more of a guard. Victor, like, tries to be a guard. I'm not sure what position he's going to be in the NBA. And then you have the concerns about, like, his size. Like, what big dudes like that have had, you know, been healthy their whole careers? Well, usually not
you
many.
You would say, ceiling-wise, in terms of who Victor could be, is yeah. Giannis. Giannis is the ceiling.
He's gotta beef up.
Yeah, if you hit it right, he's not a center.
See, I don't think he's that athletic, though. Anywhere close to that level of athlete.
He shoots it a hell of a lot better.
But I'm talking about just like raw athlete. No chance he's anywhere near.
But go back and look at when Giannis was drafted. He looked a lot like Victor Wembanyama. He had no muscle development.
But he was faster,
very
jump
thin.
Higher. I don't think Victor's really that fluid with it, to be honest with you.
I'll tell you what, and I've said this before, but the one that really got me was of all the things that I saw of Victor was on the dead run, he stopped on a dime in the corner behind the three-point line, went up in the air, adjusted and squared his shoulders in the air while turning, and hit nothing but the bottom of the net on a three. And I went, oh my, I didn't expect a guy that big to be able to do something like that. That's what a guard does.
Sure.
So
Miller can do that too. He's 6'8".
But I think as it compares to Giannis, I think that he's a much better with an offensive, you know, offensively gifted from a shooting perspective.
No doubt about that.
Can he develop into having enough strength to do what he needs to do in the NBA? It remains to be seen. He doesn't have to necessarily be Giannis because Giannis has to do a lot of what he does because he isn't as gifted as a shooter. So he spends a majority of his time inside and down low and pounding and finishing and doing the things on the run, taking contact. Victor, we don't know if he's just going to be transitional. He could do both, but the chances of him putting on some muscle are probably pretty good and filling out a little bit.
Yeah.
It's just how far do you need him to go for your team?
I would draft Victor number one. Don't get this twisted. Don't get me wrong, but I do have fear drafting him number one. It's like the same thing with Bryce Young. Like I would draft Bryce Young number one probably, but I have fear there. Actually, I don't know if I'd draft Bryce. I don't know if I want to make that statement. But I would be okay if drafting Bryce Young at number one. But I would have fear there because of his height, 5'10 and a half, small. I would have no hesitation drafting Victor number one. I would run to the podium. I would draft Victor number yep. one, and then I would have a ton of fear about him breaking down because of his size and having foot injuries and all like Chet.
It's like Chet
Holmgren, who was Sam Bowie, right? Like he had foot issues too.
No,
like,
Sam Bowie had shin injuries, and it kept snapping. He couldn't stay healthy.
There you go. Big guys. I'm worried about big guys, and if you're talking about that guy, all of a sudden adding a bunch of artificial weight. That scares me because I, you know, you need your feet in basketball, and if you have a huge, tall dude like that putting on 50 pounds of muscle, I think it causes guys to break down. 713-780-ESPN 713-780-3776. One point of contention with our show has been: what do you do with Brandon Cooks? What do the Texans do with a guy who kind of quit on his team, pouted all season long, wants to be traded, but doesn't have the value of perhaps the player that he is in the NFL. Nick Caserio provides an update on Brandon Cooks and how it's been to work with Cap D'Amico Ryan so far. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Be like me and take the day off work and play a fun round of golf with your favorite sports station at the ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 Occasional Invitational presented by PsychJab.com, benefiting Kids Mills. This year's tournament will take place Wednesday, March 8, 10:30 a.m. at Wildcat Golf Club. Each golfer will receive beverages from Carbach Brewing Company, lunch from Mendocino Farms, dinner, 18 holes of golf, and a limited edition ESPN t-shirt. Register now at ESPN975.com. All right, Brandon Cooks has been a point of contention between Blankers and I. I need a top 125 pick to trade Brandon Cooks. Blankers a little bit more on the just get rid of the guy. He's been it's addition by subtraction, which is probably a popular opinion, quite frankly. Here was Nick Caserio addressing the media today in Indy just before the shrimp cocktail at St. Elmo's, talking about Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, I'd say we're kind of in the team building process here. So every player, every individual situation, we'll look at it. And then ultimately, we'll do what we feel is best for the team, the organization moving forward.
That was the biggest nothing burger I've ever heard. Oh, no Why doubt. Did you even put that in the rundown? That was the biggest nothing burger. Yeah, they're going to address the situation. Cool. Sun will rise tomorrow.
That's my bad. I was scrambling for the show. I wrote the headline and then...
713-780-ESPN. Make a case for me that was nothing more, or that was more than a nothing burger. 713-780-3776. Play it again for us, Joe George, so the Hive can weigh in on this. 713-780-3776. Is this more than a nothing burger from the Texans general manager?
Yeah, I'd say we're kind of in the team building process here, so every player, every individual situation, we'll look at it, and then ultimately we'll do what we feel is best for the team and the organization moving forward.
We'll look at it and make a decision later.
Did Cal serve that up at training camp with ketchup, mustard, and a little onions and pickles?
Oh, man.
Because Jeremy's exactly right. That was a complete
nothing burger
with a side of word salad. I mean, that was awful.
I don't need my general manager to be revealing. I don't need stuff. Do I like it? Yeah.
Here's the answer.
Absolutely, I like it. I like Dana Brown giving us information so we can talk about and form educated decisions what the Astros are going to do. James Click really didn't do that, but I still like James Click, too. Like, I don't need – the general manager's job is to build the best team possible and also have, like, the long-term plan
You
in
lose
place.
The fan base when you get snarky about it, right?
And lie. I don't feel like he was snarky there, though.
No,
did
not
you?
This time. Yeah. I'm saying in the past, previously, the way he's done both to where he's gotten under the skin of a lot of Texans fans. But you know what? The other alternative would have been to say, Davis Mills is under contract. Davis Mills is going to play quarterback for the Houston Texans in training camp, and we're going to have him on our roster next year. That's it. That's all I got to say, too, because that's the one quarterback that DeMeco didn't want to mention by name, but he's the only quarterback on the roster. So guess what? He's on our squad. Yeah. He's expected to come out and give us his best. He's going to play. That's it.
Yeah, we get nothing burgers from Nick Caserio. Did you put that on the master sheet too, Joe George? Did you put that for the entire station to play? That's great. That's 5 seconds or never. Wow, let's hear that one more time from Nick Caserio. This big nothing burger with, as Joel said, pickles, lettuce, and cheese.
Yeah, I'd say we're kind of in the team building process here. So every player, every individual situation, we'll look at it, and then ultimately we'll do what we feel is best for the team, the organization moving forward.
Thanks for your time, Nick. Thanks for contributing to today's program.
What about that side of
there was supposed to be, I meant to put parentheses, like quotes, like update. Like it's not a real update.
And the Wheelhouse is going to break down every word that he said and what it's going to mean for the salary cap.
You are rolling today. You're just like a sniper up here.
Lamont, which Malcolm Flex LM is.
Oh, he's
Twitter
back?
Handle. And this one's pretty funny. Brandon Cooks is Veroka Salt, the pouty little girl from Willy Wonka. Get rid of this bum. It never works out well once they show you their stripes. At this point, I don't give a flying crap about his value. He's proved to be a little B-word. Okay. Lamont didn't hold back. Willy Wonka scared me when I was a kid. Did it scare you? Yeah,
no.
I was terrified of Willy Wonka.
You mean like the when they go through the tunnel scene?
What are the Wonkas called? The little guys?
Oompa Loompas.
Oompa Loompas?
The Oompa Loompas terrified me. I had nightmares about Oompa Loompas. Absolutely.
Okay.
They were like what color were they? They were green.
Oh, they were like purpley with brown.
They were
like
orange.
Really, they were like
they were orange.
They went to
hair.
Like a tanning booth and overdid it.
Those guys didn't scare you.
No.
They looked terrifying. They had an orange face with green hair and white eyebrows.
They could hardly
move.
They
scared me so much.
They're like the cop that goes to the donut shop too much and then expected to run some guy down in a street chase.
And they did the weird
couldn't
dance.
They couldn't catch you or do anything to you.
What was their dance that they would do? Oompa,
Loompa. Loompa, dee
That was terrifying for like six-year-old me.
You know what was more terrifying? The kid in the blue that couldn't stop doing the Everlasting Gobstoppers and the girl.
Oh, that's not that guy. That
the spoiled brat girl that kept just... hoarding all the candy.
I never watched that movie from start to finish.
Oh, I
never.
I liked Willy Wonka.
I was so scared of the Oompa Loompas. I was terrified of Oompa Loompas. I'm certainly not alone there, right? 713-780-3776. I'm looking for
Gene
a little
Wilder
bit of validation.
Gene Wilder was not anything to be scared of as Willy Wonka. Yeah.
No, he wasn't, but the Oompa Loompas were. They were terrifying. Caserio talking about the early days of working with Cap. Let's see if this is more than a nothing burger from Nick Caserio.
It's been awesome. He was going back and forth there a little bit. So the first week kind of got a little taxed. But he's been very, very open-minded, very thoughtful. We kind of take our time, really want to think through decisions as we assemble the coaching staff. That was a big part of it. Have a few candidates here, talk to a number of different candidates. All right, let's, he wants to sleep on it, give it some thought. All right, and then come back. All right, yeah, that makes sense. What about this? He's very open-minded. We have a lot of open communication. There's been a lot of dialogue. We actually met as a staff yesterday offensively and defensively. We kind of went through their evaluation. We gave him some free agents to look at. So wanted to hear the staff's thoughts. DeMeco has his thoughts. I have my thoughts. And we're really going to try to blend everything together here as we're going through. So he's been great. I mean, everything that I think that I heard or knew about him beforehand has come to fruition. And
I don't think that's a nothing burger there. Actually, I think there's a lot to take from that, to be honest with you.
As opposed to who he was dealing with, who he is now dealing with, too?
What do you mean?
Well, like, I think he struggled to interact and handle and deal with and not get frustrated with Cully, for sure.
Yeah.
But I think early on, he and Lovey got along, but then I think the old school versus new school.
Yeah. I don't think they butted heads, but I don't think they were aligned.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Now, I actually think there's going to be some people that don't like this soundbite. Because a lot of people, whenever DeMeco Ryans came in, it kind of minimizes Nick Caserio's voice in the room, right? And Caserio's talking about how open-minded DeMeco is. He's talking about how much of a blend of voices there's going to be between DeMeco and Caserio. Now, look, I don't think that there's a lot wrong with that, because I think that you need to have alignment between general manager and head coach. But there was a lot of people that wanted Nick Caserio fired. They didn't want Nick Caserio here. They felt with DeMeco Ryans being the next head coach of the Houston Texans that Nick Caserio was going to have less input. This soundbite, that's just as much input as Nick Caserio's ever had before. Now, maybe not as Cully, but this is Caserio that still very much is getting his two cents in and is having a lot of power within the organization.
I think he saw this when this hiring process was so hyper important, as also kind of a day of reckoning for him, his own career here with the Texans. Like, he was being evaluated too. He was told behind the scenes, and it was evident in the way he spoke to the media that day and since then, that there was a change in his demeanor because someone had to kind of reel him in and realize this is on you. And so this is as much about you with this hire as it is about DeMeco, and you're going to have to get along with this guy. And so he knew that DeMeco was the right guy for the job, but it still remained to be seen if he was the right guy to work with for him.
Yeah, and I mean, it sounds like Caserio has a lot of influence, a lot of
And I think
power.
That's the best case scenario for Nick, for Nick, is the fact that you got a guy that was the right choice for the organization, but in the process, that guy was still open-minded enough to give you the input and the ability for you to do your job, too, because he knows I need you. If you're going to be here, as a general manager, I've only got so much time in the day. I got to focus on the roster, the locker room, and everything we're trying to do as a football team. Mm-hmm. You go build the team and the roster the right way. And as long as we're communicating, I'm cool.
People are tweeting me pictures of Oompa Loompas. Do not do that. Send them to @PacManJoel.
Definitely, because I'm not afraid of them.
Definitely do not text them at 713-780-3776. I'm not sure that I've overcome that fear. 713-780.
What if Joe George for Halloween comes in with purple overalls and a tan face?
I would throw up and go home sick. Oh, like, wow. I'm scared. What are y'all scared of? You aren't scared of anything from your childhood days? Like clowns, things like that? Like a lot of people are scared of clowns when they're kids, or like mascots, or like Santa.
I didn't.
I wasn't scared of those things. The only thing I was ever scared of was Oompa Loompas. Oompa Loompas terrified me.
I can't say that there was anything that
scared
me from a character.
Something
literally
scared you.
Snakes?
I don't like snakes.
I don't like on the golf course to this day. I despise snakes.
I'm better with them now, but as a kid, like, I remember my dad built a house, like, early days of the Woodlands, and, like, it was out in the wilderness, and I would go, and, like, I didn't do any work. I would just watch everybody else work, but there was, like, a snake that crept up on me, and, like, oh.
Like, if you played desert golf, Arizona, Vegas, all that, when you hear that.
The Sidewinders
or you're trying to find your ball, and all of a sudden you go face-to-face with one of those big old snakes, I'm like, you can have the ball, you can have all of it. No chance.
What are you scared of? What childhood you do you have fears of? 713-780-3776. Some people might have fears of Mel Kiper. We make mock drafts great again. Mel Kiper with the latest and greatest. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Herman Bone, I'm scared to death of flying roaches because they don't know where they're going when they're flying. If they can't fly, I'm not that scared, but I can't stand here to hear the sound of their wings.
Joel, have you seen a flying roach? Bat wings.
I could see that. Bats are kind of creepy. Do you ever go to Wall? Have you ever went to Wall with
the Wall Street Bridge?
Have they come back very well after the freeze?
I heard
they okay, they did.
I think so, because they're still like when you drive around 5 o'clock at night, and it'll change now with daylight savings and all that, but the people are still lined up. The last time I was over that way to see them, like at dusk.
Yeah, I've been wanting to take my family, but I heard that since the freeze, they weren't very good. But they're back. 713-780-3776 The Wall Bats back. Bats are pretty creepy. I knew somebody in high school that got bit by a rabid bat. They had their window.
That's awful. Because now you're going to need shots.
Yeah, they their window was open. It was during the day, so it was rabid, and they flew into the room and bit the kid. Like terrible.
So my neighbors, when I lived in Midtown, had the townhouse like two or three doors down from me. And they had, unbeknownst to them, they had like a small hole like where the shingles meet the attic, like the edge on the edge. And we were all sitting outside one night on lawn chairs, and we looked up, and it was like air traffic control at IAH. It was like 100 of them, one after another, started. And they were like, the family's like, wonder where those are coming from. It seems like they're kind of close. And the next day, we looked up there when it was sunlight, and I go, that might have been. They went up in their attic.
It's weird, man.
And they stink. So I think they were in the attic, and just with the bat droppings and everything like that, ooh, that's nasty.
I think that happened to Obert.
Oh, is that right?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bad situation.
He had like a little bitty hole in the side of his house that he didn't realize, and they were creeping through the little hole.
There were hundreds of them. And the bat droppings and everything else, the whole attic had to be like fumigated and all this. It was a huge undertaking.
Lamont says, I can totally get behind being afraid of Oompa Loompas, but that was not the most disturbing thing in the movie. Then he said, he screen grabs this and he says, the four grandparents in bed together haunts me. I have dreams about that. Looking at this picture, like, what in the world? What a creepy movie that was.
It's also just like, what a terrible parent figure, whatever the Uncle Joe is.
Yeah. Because I mean, I don't even know who Uncle Joe is because I didn't watch that.
He can't walk.
Uncle Joe was like the guy that looked like...
he's the one that goes with him to the factory.
He looked like the Monopoly man.
I think it's Joe. But like, he can't
work. Right? He's got the big gray mustache?
Yes. And then like, he gets to go to a chocolate factory and all of a sudden he can walk again. Like, why aren't you working? Your family's dirt poor.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Ryan was like bees. I was scared of bees.
Really?
So bad.
And now you work with the killer bees.
When I was like a kid, like I closed my hand on the playground and I asked, like just as I closed it, I caught one. And it was just in my hand.
Your dumbass was probably trying to kill
you. You killed that bee too. It sting you? Did it sting you? Yeah, you killed the bee.
And the palm hurts. That's a tough spot to get stung.
Joe George is a bee killer.
I am. That's why I'm here.
That's not a great sign for us. 0709, Crypt Keeper from Tales from the Crypt.
What did you say his title was? Can we change that?
Yeah. Well, do y'all know what this one is? Crypt Keeper from the Tales of the Crypt?
Crypt Keeper.
Do you know what that is? Crypt? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Do you know what it is? What is it?
It's like,
just a bad movie or a scary movie?
The Crypt Keeper is the one that comes out from like the coffin, right?
I don't know. That was The Undertaker, I think.
No. Isn't it like a skeleton type?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. That's why I'm asking you.
I think that's the Crypt Keeper. No, I think that's right.
8029, stop sending me pictures of Oompa Loompas. I don't want to see that. 5399, I literally had a nightmare about rattlesnakes last night. My oldest son loves snakes. Unbelievable. 3280, Richardson is last name, too. We won't say your last name, Rich. The Night Stalker. I lived in SoCal as a kid. Was that a serial killer?
Maybe.
I don't know who the Night Stalker is. I watched that documentary about Alec Murdaugh or whatever his name is, by the way.
The lawyer right now that's on trial?
The lawyer that's on trial for killing his wife Murdaugh. And his son. Murdaugh. Yeah. It's weird. Like, his name is spelled Murdaugh.
Right.
But it's pronounced like Murdaugh.
Yep.
And his name is Alexander, and he goes by Alec. Like, yeah, that dude's a killer. He says his name is Murdaugh when it's looks like Murdaugh, and he calls himself Alec
when his
name
testimony?
Is Alexander.
In his testimony, he wanted to seem more endearing and suddenly started like having nicknames for his kid and his wife that he had never used before. And
really?
Everybody's like, yeah, there's something that's...
So I've stayed away from the actual trial until I finished watching the documentary because I didn't want any spoilers. I'm a huge anti-spoiler guy. Mm-hmm. The documentary, dude, there's a lot going on with that family. Like, they might have killed half a dozen people.
Really?
Like, watch the documentary. It like is you've heard, wild.
So you've heard the fact that, because he said that on certain given days, he might have taken 60 different, like, painkillers
well,
and all that?
There's some controversy with that, too.
But then he had to admit he lied to authorities when he was being interviewed. And then at the one point, he was wearing an Apple Watch that monitors steps. And they're like, so you weren't, when we were trying to find you the night of the crimes, you weren't running away, right? And he was like, no, sir. He's like, well, then how come your Apple Watch said you were doing 70 steps a minute or more? Were you on a treadmill? Were you bouncing around on a trampoline?
I highly recommend. Has Lisa been following along with the I'm sure
the
she
news
has.
Stories? Yes, but
please,
not the documentary.
Please watch the documentary.
Okay.
It's three Netflix? Episodes. They're all under an hour. It's on Netflix. Okay. It is wild. Like all the stuff that had like. This stuff that happened, like the current trial he's on where he killed his wife and his kid,
son, yeah.
There's like three other stories before that.
About them?
Yes. It is wild. It is really, really
good.
Didn't
he say that this was payback?
I mean, it's bad, but...
This was payback that someone was trying to get for something that happened where either the kid or someone turned in somebody?
You need to watch the documentary. I promise you. You will not be disappointed. The dude is a... I mean, he's a scumbag. It is wild. It is good television, sad to say. 32382 says, Joel Osteen creeps me out. People are texting things that they're scared of. Flying Monkeys, Wizard of Oz. That's what you were thinking of, Joe George.
That's what I said.
Yeah, but you then backtracked on what you thought it was from.
Well, I couldn't remember if it was from Wizard of Oz or from Wicked.
8029, Jeepers
Wicked.
Creepers.
You watching porn?
It's a musical.
Oh.
Okay. Cringe. Cringe.
You, of course, are cringe.
Cringe. 8029, Jeepers Creepers. What was that one movie where they sang that song? Jeepers Creepers, where did you get those peepers? It was a scary movie back like in my high school days. 0709, Joel is right. The skeleton from the show that used to come on the Sci-Fi channel. I guess that was the other one we're talking about.
Yep.
Josh and Beaumont, the dancing electronic animals at Showbiz Pizza were creepy back in the day.
Did y'all have Showbiz down here?
I was going to say Chuck E. Cheese.
Chuck E. Cheese.
Because
the band was so creepy.
Showbiz Pizza in the Midwest was Chuck E. Cheese down here. And then I think they all were under the same umbrella.
Yeah,
it was
Showbiz. I remember going to Showbiz like one or two times. I think Chucky bought them.
Yeah, I think that's right. But yeah, they're all the same stage characters, the electronic band members and all that.
So
yeah.
Those are creepy. I went there the day Selena died.
How do you? Okay.
Because I remember I used to live in Uvalde back in the day. As we remember, we talked about this. But we were driving home to visit family in Houston, and we were listening to the radio the day Selena died, and. My mom was like, "Yeah, we're gonna take you to Chuck." We already were planning on going to Chuck E. Cheese, but it all runs together. All right, 713-780 ESPN. Let's get to the Mel Kiper making mock drafts great again. The latest and greatest with Mel. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Mel Kiper, greatest mock drafters of all time. Great hair. He's got Lego man hair. Yep. He's definitely got Lego man hair, Mel Kiper does. I'm kidding about the greatest mock drafter ever thing. But maybe one of the most well-known. He's been doing it forever. He's had battles with former Colts general managers, all of that. He does contradict his big boards in his mock drafts. But he's out with his latest mock draft today. And as all of these mock drafts are going to do, at least a heavy majority of them that make trades with their mock draft, there's going to be a trade at number one. Today's trade, well, the Bears make the trade with
Colts,
the Houston Texans.
Oh.
He makes the trade with the Texans. He said it would look similar to the one that was made with Chicago and Trubisky when the Bears moved up one spot. They gave up two third-round draft picks, blah, 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 blah. He says, I don't think the Texans would have to give up their other first-round pick at number 12, but they have an extra third-rounder in this draft that could be appealing. So he suggests a number two and a third rounder to move up one spot. I think Chicago is going to get more than that from Indianapolis to move up from number four to number one. I don't think this is enough, but he suggests a third rounder, number two, to move up one spot for the number one overall pick. I think the Bears will get blown away by somebody else. I honestly wouldn't do that. Anyways, he has the Houston Texans trading up to number one and selecting, you want to guess it?
Go ahead.
Bryce Young. He has him selecting Bryce Young. Bryce Young has been the most popular pick for the Houston Texans, whether they trade up to number one, whether they stay at number two. And then after Bryce Young, it's been C.J. Stroud. It's the most popular picks. So Mel Kiper has the Texans going Bryce Young at number one. He then projects another trade. He has the Bears trading down a second time to the Colts. And then the Colts taking C.J. Stroud. Arizona keeps their pick. They select Will Anderson in Chicago, who trades down twice for additional draft capital, then selects Jalen Carter, potentially the best player in this
Bears,
draft.
You got to love that.
I think Joe George would be over the moon, right?
Giddy.
If they
way
trade
over the moon.
Now, I don't think they got great return for the first overall pick. Like, they got an additional third, which is like the very bare minimum for Chicago. But trading down to two, then trading down to number four, you add additional draft capital. You still have Fields. If you're a believer in Fields, Joe George is. And you draft Jalen Carter, who many people feel is the BPA. Mm-hmm. They feel he's the best player available. He has Will Levis being the third quarterback off the board, number five to Carolina, and then he has Anthony Richardson sliding to number nine for Seattle. So he has all four quarterbacks going in the top nine, which is that a bet that you want to make in Vegas? All four of these first-round quarterbacks going in the top 10. All right, so we know that the Texans trade up. They select Bryce Young. They're able to keep the number 12 pick. So we've been using the practice where we look to see who the mock drafter picks in that spot, and then we have the next three. This is going to be one that is a bit radical, quite frankly. He has the Houston Texans at number 12 selecting Tyree Wilson, the defensive end from Texas Tech.
We've had him go all the way in multiples being the top five.
There's been, of the mocks that we've been doing lately and make mock drafts great again, most of those mocks have had Tyree Wilson as a top five pick.
Yep.
How he's at number 12 in Mel Kiper's mock, shocking. Now, maybe Mel Kiper will be proven to be right on April 27th, but using Mel Kiper's mock and then looking at just like the aggregate of everybody else's mock draft, Tyree Wilson at 12 seems rather radical. It seems on the radical end of falling in the draft. So he has the Texans taking Tyree Wilson, the defensive end from Texas Tech. The next three picks, the Jets take Anton Harrison, which I haven't seen him that high. Tackle out of Oklahoma. 14th, he has the Patriots taking Jackson Smith and Jibba, the wide receiver from Ohio State. And then at 15, he has Green Bay selecting Michael Mayer, the tight end for Notre Dame.
So our guy's in the mix, and Mayer.
Mayer's been a popular guy in this practice of somebody we've had to pick out of. Smith and Jibba's been kind of popular, too. First time we've seen Anton Harrison in this practice, and the first time we've seen Tyree Wilson in this practice.
I mean, if Tyree Wilson is there, based on where everybody has put him, then I'm very intrigued by that pick. And again, you give D'Amico one of his guys, a guy that he can make a pick with, that he feels like can immediately impact what he's trying to do with a new team with his defensive alignments and system. It's intriguing to me. But I love receiver and tight end. So like I said, I've got to stay consistent all along in the fact that if I'm going to take a quarterback, and in this case number one overall, then I'm going to give him a weapon. And I'm going to give him a weapon right from the jump that he can grow and develop with and develop chemistry with. So it's either going to be Mayer for me, or Smith and Jigba, and to me, I'm kind of, again, I'm intrigued by the fact that a lot of people say that Smith and Jigba is the kind of guy that could be a wide receiver one, that, you know, he was hurt last year, whatever the case, he didn't play a full season, you know, they're expecting that this kid could be a big impact player. I think that I would rather go, if I have the chance of getting a really good receiver, I like it. So for that case alone, I think I'm going to go with the receiver.
One of my hopes and wishes of this draft for the Texans is that they can figure out a way to get quarterback and a really good defensive lineman. The way that I've been going about it is I take Will Anderson, Jalen Carter at number two, and then I want the Texans to package 12 and Cleveland's 2024 first-round pick to trade up into the Will Levis territory to acquire Will Levis. That way you have a standout defensive lineman and you have a really good you have a franchise quarterback possibility. It's no guarantee. Any of these guys are not guarantees that they'll be a franchise quarterback. A lot of people are jumping to the conclusion that if you take a quarterback in the top five, that they're guaranteed to be a franchise quarterback. The opposite is actually true. This scenario that we've been using, this practice, it gives me the option of finding that quarterback and defensive lineman scenario. Now, Tyree Wilson being available at number 12, I find, again, to be radical. But using the practice that we've been using, if I have the option of Tyree Wilson, Anton Harrison, Jackson Smith and Jibba, and Michael Mayer, I got to draft Tyree Wilson. Like, that is such good value to pass up on him at number 12. I get ultimately what I want to get out of the top, you know, my two picks in the top 12, quarterback, defensive lineman for DeMeco Ryans. And if you're telling me I get Bryce Young at number one, and now I have my option of these four guys, there is no way that I'm passing on Tyree Wilson. I'm running to the podium, and I'm turning in that pick card in like 10 seconds because I'm slow these days.
Look, I get it. And I don't disagree that that would also be something to be considered. Like I said, you give your new head coach something, a player that can really help him do what he needs to do on the defensive side of the football. But I think it's so wholeheartedly important to get this quarterback off in the right, on the right foot from day one.
Sure.
That's why of the two, I sided with offense.
I understand getting a target for Bryce Young. Like, I can certainly respect that and understand why you'd be willing to do that. I just can't pass on the value of Tyree Wilson. I'm very intrigued by Jackson Smith. And
by the way, I don't think Tyree Wilson's going to be there.
No, I don't either. I think it's ridiculous.
Feels like top six.
I feel like Mel Kiper lose a lot of credibility here, to be completely honest with you, which isn't great for my Will Levis case. But yeah, that feels outrageous to me. If he's there, I would be stunned. But there's just, I can't pass that value. Now, Smith and Jigba as a prospect, it's almost the Derek Stingley pick because you're going on the film of what he put on film 2 years ago. Whereas right. Stingley's film 2 years ago, wow. Jackson Smith and Jigba's film 2 years ago looked really, really good. Mm-hmm. The one, it's not even a concern, I guess it's more of a question, is, you know, what does Jackson Smith and Jigba, and if you're expecting John Metchie to come back, how does that look like for you? Because, look, I think either guy is capable of playing outside a little. I think Mechie's probably more capable than Smith and Jigba to play outside. But I think at their best, they're both slot guys. So do you kind of have the same guy if you're going with Smith and Jigba and John Metchie? That said, like, give me the talent and let the coaches figure it out.
I would agree with that because we've both been saying, look, this wide receiver room isn't very deep and it isn't very talented at this point, especially with the wild card being the unknowns of John Metchie. So if you can get two guys that immediately, and maybe one ends up being your number two and one ends up being your slot, that's great. If one can progress to the point of being a one and really shows that, you know, a dynamic ability to get open and also be a burner, then that's even better. But I think that you'd rather have those problems than on the flip side of it going, hey, we're still searching for guys that can go out and catch the football, and we're trying to figure out if Collins can be the kind of guy eventually that we were hoping for that we haven't seen yet, and I don't know how much longer they're going to keep holding out hope. So I think that as long as you upgrade that room, you're gonna find other alternative ways, and next year's draft might be it, where you can have a chance to get a wide receiver one.
Who are you going with in this practice, Joe George? You get the option of who Kiper has the Texans picking at 12. This case, it's Tyree Wilson. Anton Harrison, tackle from Oklahoma. Jackson Smith and Jibba, of course, receiver from Ohio State.
All
Michael
right,
Mayer,
well,
of course,
we're just gonna time tight end from Notre Dame. Time out.
All right, take
the
time out.
We got to correct this.
Is that the Zach Morris timeout where everybody else has to freeze?
In Jigba.
What did I say?
Njibba. You're missing the G in there.
Njibba? What did I say? Njibba?
Yeah.
It's not a silent G?
No.
I'm a silent G.
I'm looking at the Columbus Dispatch and Ohio State's official pronunciation guide. So I'm just letting you know. I'm gonna make sure Jeremy's always on.
Hold on. So I said,
why are you coming at him?
No, I don't mind. Jackson Smith. What did I say? Njibba?
It's yeah. Njibba.
So I just dropped the G.
Just
a
the
silent
G,
G? That's because I operate like a silent G, my man.
Yeah, that's. It's fine. I'll allow that. My answer is Tyree Wilson.
You'll allow that.
I'm going to allow that.
That's my bad. That's my bad.
Look at him flashing his clout all week this week. Cutting off callers. Just
no.
Did that call drop? Flexing. Nope. I dropped him.
He's doing a little flexing.
Well, I'm a team player here.
Are you?
Yes. I'm helping out my team.
Yeah, blasting me on the air to millions
of
Yeah,
really.
In the
call
city.
Him out in a break. Not, it's only Twitch here.
He kept saying
no,
it.
That's funny. It's funny. I don't mind it.
Tyree Wilson, and if that's what you're giving up for Bryce Young, that's the answer. I think it's a no-brainer. If he was there at 12, it's like that's the perfect draft.
Mel Kiper might be just pandering to the city of Houston.
Yeah, like literally, like you couldn't – if Nick Caserio did that, we'd walk in the next day and say he's the best, one of the best GMs in the city.
But what do I always say? Like if we go like Mel Kiper's 2.0, 3.0, every different one, he's just looking to get clicks. He's looking to get the reaction.
This one like isn't radical, though. It's just
it's not radical.
It's not
but
radical in the sense of like, give me all your attention. It's radical in the sense of like just how wrong it appears to be.
But again, that's going to draw a lot of attention because it's going to drum up conversation. People are going to talk. And as we get closer to the draft, then he'll really start to dial it in and start really trying to guess what teams are actually going to do. Right now, all these mock drafts. They're all trying to just get some fan base or some form of the population, the football fans, fired up. They want to create conversation and clicks. Yeah.
He says about Tyree, he said, kind of the reason that he falls here. That said, he's coming off a broken foot that ended his season, and his combine medicals will be important. As a traditional 4-3 defensive end, he still needs to keep developing his pass rush repertoire. So maybe the foot injury is going to spook some people.
And we know Nick Cassero likes to draft hurt players.
That's true.
Especially feet.
That's true. Now, what Joe said is true. If this is the return for the Texans after April 27th, and we come back in here on Friday at noon, and we're talking about this return, even me, a guy who doesn't want to trade up to number one, if it's a third rounder and number two to trade up one spot, it's like, a little more than I wanted to give, but you're assuming that Bryce Young's tier one at that point. So you're going to get your guy for a very reasonable deal, according to the other trade proposals we've seen. And then you get the defensive end, who earlier in the show we were talking about potentially emerging as a tier one defensive lineman in this draft with Jalen Carter and Will Anderson. This would be a draft, to Joe's point, that after Thursday, Houston would be over the moon.
I was going to say, not only over the moon, but I think Nick Caserio would get a lot of passing grades right from the jump because of the fact that there's really not much to bitch about. If you get the quarterback and you get a top-tier defensive player with those top two picks, basically, if you just look at the consensus of all the people that have been evaluating this draft class, you would think that that's a home run, and no matter what happens with them, Nick wouldn't take the blame for these two guys.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN. Maybe it's Mel Kiper making mock drafts great again, at least in Houston, with that latest and greatest. All right, what are our overreactions, our hot takes from over the weekend and yesterday, that we're going to cash them or trash them, which selling to the other two guys? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.